Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Fear is bad business. Paris, the biggest tourist destination in the world, is discovering that this week, as holiday bookings are being canceled because of last week's attacks, and there is a global travel alert for U.S. travelers from the State Department. What do you think about that?
My name is Ralph Wilson. I'm calling from San Antonio, Texas. And I wouldn't use the term afraid, but the events in Paris have made me cautious. I was planning an extended vacation tour in Europe next summer, and I have altered my plans. I looked at it and thought, as many events as were going on and with the lockdowns, I will just wait a little bit and see if things don't improve. And meanwhile, in the United States, there's a whole lot of things to see anyway.
Stay home this holiday season, says Ralph. Others of you note that fear is not reality when you are making travel plans or formulating policies about migration, security, and defense.
It's Adam from San Leandro, California. Have I changed my behavior because of the recent events in Paris? Not at all. It's incredibly sad and deserves attention, but the dangers have been completely blown out of proportion. My family and I have been discussing this topic, and they feel like the world is falling apart. But I think our government should be logical enough not to change policy when events like this happen.
Well, what's the history in this kind of thing? Fear is bad business. Is it also bad politics? Corey Robin, the author of Fear, The History of a Political Idea, joins us. He's currently professor of political science at Brooklyn College and the CUNY Graduate Center right here in New York. So, Corey, is fear good politics in the sense that you can move the needle with it, but it's bad politics because it produces bad policy?
I think on the whole it tends to be pretty bad politics. The problem with fear is that we're very selective about the things that we fear, as the callers that we just heard made clear. There are a lot of dangers, there are a lot of risks in the world, and we tend to focus on some rather than others. And the ones that we tend to focus on don't oftentimes necessarily track the real dangers that we actually are confronting.
Why is it working for someone like Donald Trump, for instance, who seems to be the Tom Brady of outrageous statements that cause people to be scared?
I do want surveillance. I will absolutely take database on the people coming in from Syria if we can't stop it, but we're going to.
Well, think about the different kinds of things that we could be afraid of. Climate change is one. Gun violence is another. Terrorism is a third. Of those three, only one of them, if you're going to try to fight it, involves relatively few costs to strong, dominant social lobbies, and that's, of course, terrorism. If you want to take on gun violence, you have to take on the NRA. The Republican Party doesn't want to do that. If you want to take on climate change, you have to take on the oil industry. So you pick a fear where the cost or the burden of dealing with it is borne by a relatively powerless social group, Muslims or Arab Americans. And it makes perfect sense politically for someone like Donald Trump.
In historical terms, the rhetoric is short-lived, but often the changes that are made are much, much longer duration, the Patriot Act being one after 9/11. Describe this quick rhetorical hit that's followed by a long, long period of consequences.
Yeah. Remember after 9/11, the entire media, our social institutions, politics, they were all jacked up and rhetorically, and everybody was talking. After a while, after a couple of years, that really began to subside. The policies and the infrastructure and the bureaucracy that were created in this place, you mentioned the Patriot Act, think about the Department of Homeland Security, all of those things still exist. I teach at Brooklyn College. There was just a story in one of the New York papers that surveillance of Muslim students on our campus is still continuing. Those policies that happen behind the scenes that we don't really get much attention focused on, those continue. So it's very easy for everybody to get caught up in the rhetoric. The real problem is the long-term consequences and impact.
When is an example of someone standing firm in the sort of hysteria and saying, toe the line here or not following the prevailing sort of whims of fear?
That's a good question. I would say during the 1960s, you actually had people really begin to stand up to that kind of a thing. But that requires a broad social movement. But you did have figures Or actually, an even better example is the ACLU was actually created in the midst of the first Red Scare, a small group of people really banding together and trying to put a stop to things, a couple of dissenters. But it's, you know, the record is just not very strong on this score, unfortunately.
In many ways, that's sort of why we revere Lincoln so much, is that in the midst of extraordinary turmoil, he had the ability to take very unpopular positions and not allow the Union to be swept away.
Yeah, that's true, although we should, you know, even Lincoln had some,
yeah,
you know,
trouble. Serious caveats, yeah.
You know, with suspending the writ of habeas corpus. But that's actually a very good example that, you know, for all the criticism that Lincoln got, that was a moment of tremendous, tremendous civil war when the nation's existence really was in peril. And if you compare it to other situations, what's most impressive about Lincoln is how much he did not succumb to the kind of hysteria that one would see, you know, today when, you know, however horrible terrorism is, it doesn't actually pose any kind of existential threat to the existence of the United States.
What's your greatest fear, Corey, about what might be put in place in the midst of, you know, we haven't done immigration reform, it's still something that's, you know, more than a decade overdue to be done, and now we're in the midst of this sort of fear discussion about Syrian migrants. What's your greatest fear of what might happen as a result of all this?
Mostly just an intensification of what already has been happening. You know, in places like Brooklyn, where you have a large Arab and Muslim population, you know, those communities have been under lockdown for quite a long time and slowly emerging. They were slowly emerging in the last couple of years. You have more and more Arab American and Muslim American activists speaking out. And we had the Black Lives Matter movement, which I think also helped bring attention to the kinds of issues that these communities are under threat. And my concern is that brief glimmering that we saw in the last couple of years could be shut down again.
Corey Robin is the author of Fear, the History of a Political Idea. He's currently professor of political science at Brooklyn College and the CUNY Graduate Center. Thanks so much.
Thank you.